Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners out there. My name is Coach Penn, and this is my weekly internet radio show called Third and Long. This week's show, I am going to discuss a variety of things, but remember to go onto the chat room. It says chat available up in the right-hand corner. If you have any questions or you don't agree or you want to talk smack, hey, just get on there and throw some questions out there. For those of you listening, the number to call in, if you'd like to say some things, is 347-826-7278. And then you also want to hop on the chat and give me the last four digits, who you are, so I can properly introduce you, unless you just want to come out of the woodwork and introduce yourself. That's totally all right with me. Today begins silly season for me. At the end of the 2008 IBFL and WFA seasons, teams switch leagues, new teams are created, and new leagues are started. The ladies over at WFB Talk had Jeff King on this past weekend about him starting a new league, and it wasn't really, how do I describe it? It wasn't really what I thought it was going to be, but I'm not too concerned about it now. He runs a men's league, a regionalized men's league, and it's an interesting thing, and I'm not too stressed about him starting another league and diluting the pool any further based on what he's trying to do, because if he realizes that he can't get enough teams to do a whole league, he will just help the markets that he can, which is pretty cool. So that was nice to listen to and kind of interesting. I believe I described that to the ladies. I was like, that was a very interesting show. Best word I could use to describe it. On my show, I actually was able to get in contact with the heads of state of the two remaining major leagues. I actually interviewed Catherine Masters today, the president of the CEO, president CEO, whatever you want to call it, of the NWFA, and she was nice enough to give me a full interview. She was unavailable to be on the show live, so we did that taping today, and I had an executive council member from the IWFL, Kesnia Disney, who those of you who check the message boards may have recognized on there recently. She has actually been clearing a lot of rumors up about the IWFL and their team, so that's very nice that somebody in the league offices are noticing and trying to quell or just put the rumors to rest. But she had to cancel because they had an interview with a team tonight. So she will not be on, but she did send me back the questionnaire that I submitted to her. I basically prepped both, I guess, league officials on what questions I wanted to ask them so they didn't think that I was going to, you know, surprise them with some, what do you say, I guess controversial questions, and so I sent a bunch out there, and it's all about the silly season and what they do to bring in teams. So that's what I have there, and I have her write up her answers. She's giving me permission to share them with my listening audience, all three of you. Maybe there's more. I'm just joking. There's also been some messages on the board. Gig actually plugged my show on his WPFL BS Free, whatever the acronym is, board. He publicized me on there, and I had some people request some things. I guess my name was recognized, at least the last name was Penn, and there used to be an athlete called Adrian A-Train Penn. Well, they had asked if I would do a Where Are They Now? A-Train was originally supposed to call in today, but she had a rough day at work, and she wasn't really into mood to be fun, so I gave her the slide, and I'm allowed to do that because, you know what, she's my sister. And I can give my sister a little slack every now and again. She works hard, and she deals with a lot of things that she doesn't necessarily have to deal with. So next week, hopefully the A-Train will be on the show to fill you in on what she's been doing the last couple years and what her future plans are. Somebody actually mentioned the Arizona Caliente. Well, yes, that team is basically the Prowlers now, but just like the H-Town Cyclones are not the Energy. They're not the same exact team, but they're pretty darn similar. So first thing we're going to do is play the pre-recorded interview with Catherine Masters of the NWFA. And after we come back from that, I'm going to go over what answers Kesnia gave me from the IWFL, and then I'm just going to chit-chat about that. So if you have any questions, feel free to call in. The number is listed on the site. And hop in the chat room and throw some questions out there, because during the first one, I'm just going to be sitting here listening too. So feel free to write some questions and your opinions about what you gathered from Catherine Masters, because a lot of things are said about her on the message board, and I think a lot of people form their opinions off of what is said off there. And now here's your chance to form your opinion off of what she has to say. So, BJ, roll that beautiful bean footage, and we will listen.
Hello, everybody. This is Coach Penn, and online right now I have Catherine Masters, the president of the NWFA, and we're going to throw some questions out to her about the silly season. For those of you unaware or haven't been listening and just tuned in, the silly season is the time where things get a little bit crazy from when the championship games end to when the season begins, and I have some formulated questions for Catherine to answer, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, let's first start off, for those people who don't know who you are, introduce yourself and explain what your role is with the NWFA.
Who am I?
No. That's a very in-depth question, and we're trying to only keep this 15 minutes, so let's keep, who are you based on football?
I'm the founder of the National Women's Football Association.
Okay, and what is your role?
Everything. You name it, I do it.
Oh, well, that's a lot to do for one person. I mean...
Good thing I have a lot of energy.
Well, okay. Well, that's good to hear. You have a lot of energy to accomplish a lot, because women's football is a chore. I mean, I've been coaching for 7 years, and I know that just coaching for me is overwhelming.
It's not a chore. It's a labor of love, man.
Labor of love. I need to write that down, because I think I could probably use that as a more positive spin for my players.
See, a lot of guys don't get this because, you know, you've always had football. You've always been able to play football. You know, these girls that get out there and play, this is the first time many of them have ever had a chance to play in a well-organized league. And they just love it. I mean, they're like sponges. They can't get enough of it. And, you know, the men have a hard time understanding that because they're kind of jaded with all the years that they've either been around football or played it.
Oh, and I do understand that totally. We try and express to the players on my team how rare of a gift they have to be able to play football, because there's nothing that any of the guy coaches on the team wouldn't give to still be playing.
Well, that's true, you know, and for them, I mean, remember the first time you're scrapped on the pads and went out there in a helmet and smashed somebody. I mean, it's a real trip for these people. They really enjoy it.
They do. It's just it's a new season every time I get out there for practices, and it's always a fun experience. So how long have you been in the position of doing everything?
Since 2000.
Since 2000, all but at the NWFA, or?
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the other positions of management involved with the NWFA?
Well, I've got Debbie. She's sitting right here, and Debbie's been with me since day one. She actually was a player and then broke her ankle and, like she likes to say, fell into the office. And she's been my sidekick and been an integral part of the league ever since I started it. And, you know, she's been commuting an hour each way every day to come to work here to help run the office and make sure everything gets done for the teams.
Well, I'm very familiar with commuting, as I live in, you know, the greater Los Angeles area.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand that thoroughly. Yep.
5 mile trip takes you an hour, I know.
Yeah, everything's 15 minutes away depending on the traffic, so.
Gotcha, I've been there.
Well, congratulations on completing a 2008 season with the H-Town Texas Cyclones becoming victorious.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I actually got to interview Coach Matt Coach a couple weeks ago, and he was a very intelligent fellow, and I loved talking to him, so I can't wait to have him back on the show at a later event.
Yeah, we're proud of them. They did a great job.
Yeah, so the silly season, which basically started as soon as the season ends, which actually started a couple weeks earlier this year, because the Philadelphia Phoenix, who was in your league,
right?
I guess rechristened themselves the Firebirds and joined the IWSL.
Right.
Every year this happens. Teams leave one league and go to the other, and you know, over the past couple of years, I've seen the IWFL get some of the better teams from the NWFA, where the NWFA does get teams from the IWFL, but it doesn't seem as they're as big as quality. And I just wanted to throw it out there. What do you attribute this switching from leagues back and forth to?
I agree with you on the better teams, because what happens, and it may look on the onset that the better teams, what happens, it's so funny, every year, whoever wins our championship leaves and go to the IWFL. I don't know why that happens. I don't question it, but they just do. I guess they think there's more competition over there. But what the truth of the matter is, and I think you'll agree with me, and anybody with any intelligence will agree, until these girls are paid, you never know from one season to the next who's going to be great.
That is very, very true.
You know, so, like, you know, Pittsburgh won everything in our league, and this year they didn't.
Correct.
You know, the Detroit Demolition won for years in our league, and now they don't win at all.
Right.
DC Divas won in our league, moved to the other league, now they're not winning.
Right.
You know, so you never know. I mean, until the girls are paid and they can't jump from league to league or team to team, you're never going to know. We had a team when we first started the league in Atlanta, the Atlanta Leopards, and they were a tremendous team. All of a sudden, the players got kicked off of the owner, and before you knew it, she had no team.
Yeah, that actually happened with the Quake, who I'm associated with now. They won the championship the first year of women's football, and then now all the good players left. The Quake still remained.
I mean, they were 8-0, but they didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they didn't play anybody of any consequence.
So,
I'm not, you know, that doesn't bother me at all.
Okay, well, I was just wondering, you know, and I wrote a big thing on my blog about people comparing, you know, like Dallas and Pittsburgh and Detroit to, you
can't
know,
do it until these groups are paid.
And that's exactly what I said. I said, until there's one league with everybody, you know.
No, not even one league. It's until the girls are paid and they can't jump ship.
Well, I treat it like, say, the NFL. Say, the reason that you can judge teams each year based on the prior year is because
there's a lot of reasons. I mean, they have a draft.
They have a draft.
They pay millions of dollars in salary.
They basically have the core team back, and even though you can do that in women's football, if there's any small or minor change,
you can't do it.
Fluctuation
the team because
totally
aren't paid. You know, a lot of these girls have played 7 or 8 years; they're over it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of new girls are coming up, and they have to learn how to really play football before they're going to be seasoned enough to compete on that level.
And I don't disagree at all. I just think it's funny that, you know, teams keep switching leagues, trying to, I guess, find greener pastures, or I don't know the reasons. I just think it's funny that it
well,
happens.
You know, the grass is always greener, and we get a lot of teams from the IWFL. We get a lot of teams from the former WPFL. You know, and I think it's a couple of reasons. But, you know, some like my management style, some don't like it. Some like the IWFL's management style, some don't.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's going to happen until, as I say, you know, there is the players paid and the coaches get paid.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to one day, right?
Well, I mean, you're talking millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars.
You're
50 players, even if you paid them $100 a game.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's $5,000 a game.
Yes, it is.
You know?
So it's just,
it's a lot of money, and, you know, these teams don't make any money. None of the teams bring in big fans. And until they do, you know, neither one of the leagues is going to get a national sponsor.
Correct.
We worked hard to try to get one, but they all say the same thing. You know, you may have 40 teams, but how many fans are you getting?
Right.
And when you have some teams getting 500 fans and some teams getting 50, you know, the major sponsors like General Mills or whoever it is, they're not going to, you know, put their money there. They've got too many other places to put it where they get more
exposure
for their buck.
Yeah, more exposure.
And I think the players need to understand that. The coaches need to understand that. I know my owners do, you know, because I preach this to them. You know, if you want national sponsors, you've got to put fans in the stands. That's the bottom line.
Got to sell your team.
And a lot of people only care about winning on the field, and what they don't understand is they have to win off the field. They have to bring in sponsors. They have to sell tickets. I mean, if each player, say you had 50 players sold 10 tickets, you'd have a lot of people in the stands.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I know that we did for our team is that, you know, everybody was given a quota, you know, try and sell this many tickets per game.
But I had the Nashville Dream with 2,500 people in the stands. Our Pensacola team the first year had 5,000 fans in the stands.
Yeah, I've heard of, I'm from the East Coast, so I know that football is a little bit bigger.
But not even that. I think it really depends on the energy at the team, the understanding the team owner, the team players, the team coaches have about, we're all in this together.
Right, and you know, and because I'm in such a fickle market as in L.A., I understand how hard it is out here to get people in the stands, but I know that things can be done better to get people in the stands. It's just,
I think it's a matter of, you know, making sure the community, getting the community behind you. That's what
Pensacola
was so successful.
Yeah. New Mexico was very good at that, too. They were very good at getting the community behind it, and then once they weren't very good, the community started, you know, falling off. But,
you know, it's like anything else. I mean, playing football in the spring is tough.
Yeah, it is. But I would rather play in the spring than compete with college and NFL and high school.
You can't compete in the fall.
Exactly.
I mean,
I was a coach in the WPFL, and that's the one problem I really had. I was like, you know, we're never going to get people in the stands because people are either going to watch college football or be worn out from watching football the night before in high school.
The kids are playing free football. There's just so much football. You're seeing too. You got college football, free football, high school football, pro football. And plus, it's hard to get venues.
Yes, very hard to get venues in the fall.
The problem in the spring is weather in a lot of places.
Yeah, Texas is kind of hot during the spring when it turns into
very hot in the north. We have, you know, snow still sometimes in April.
Yeah, there are actually a couple teams that played in the snow in the IWFL this year when I got film on. I was like, it's snowing. Oh, I'm glad we didn't have to play there.
Yeah.
So, all right, so
it's one class, and it's going to be that way until the players get paid.
Yeah, well,
get paid.
I don't disagree with you that at all.
So there's lots of cities that don't have women's football, so, you know, we like to bring in new teams. And one thing we don't do is we never go solicit any teams from the other leagues unless they come to us. We don't go after them.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. And that brings me right back into my next subject, which was, well, how
it's unethical to do that, you know?
Well, it is, and I think I've heard the same from the IWFL and the WPFL, is that they don't chase other teams. They try and create new teams in new areas. And how does the NWFA go about recruiting new teams besides, you know, the stuff on the web?
That's it. We don't do anything. You know, we might send out a press release saying we're looking to open in markets, but we don't definitely, you know, most people just call us.
Oh, okay. So it's just a very simple, you know, hey, somebody found out about the league, wants to join, you're like, okay, here's what we do.
Here's the deal, right.
Okay, cool. Well, that's very nice to know, and that's good that all the leagues seem to be in competition, they all seem to do pretty ethical things and not try and...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've heard that the other leagues are calling my owners. I mean, my owners call me and tell me that. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been told the same thing you said from the other two leagues as well, so...
But we definitely, I can tell you right from the horse's mouth, we've never called any of the teams in the other leagues and asked them to switch leagues.
Well, good to hear. Thank you for sharing that. Would you have 35 teams in your league this year?
Something like that. I don't
know. Yeah, I knew it was over 30, and I can't remember, you know, with teams forfeiting throughout the season because of financial issues. It always varies from every league.
Hey, financial issues, you know, what happens sometimes is, this happened since we've started the league, sometimes they'll get irritated or ticked off at the owners and just not want to play for them.
Yeah, and that's...
Happened to Modesto this year.
Happened to Modesto, and I know the Tucson teams have been through it a couple times.
Yeah.
And they seem to just rotate owners, whether it doesn't matter what league they're in, the same owner keeps on starting new teams, and everybody always quits from them. And I'm like, oh man, wow.
The teams are always good as their owners and general managers and players.
It starts at the top and works down, and everybody has to work in unison to create a great environment.
Yeah.
Well, with 30 plus teams, how do you keep everyone happy? I mean, the players, the coaches, managers.
I don't.
Well, obviously that's it's not a trick question, but it's an impossible one to keep everyone happy. But starting with management, how do you work to make sure they have what they need to get?
We are in constant communication with our owners and giving them ideas of how to market the teams and what to do to make their teams more successful. And the owners that pay attention to us and do what we ask them to do are more successful. I mean, I've been in sports marketing for 30-something years, so, I mean, I got a lot of experience that I'm happy to share with them. And so we try to do that, you know, quite often.
Okay. Well, as a coach, you know, one of the things I've found out that our owners don't share or probably are unaware that they should be sharing certain information with us. As a league owner and a league head, how do you make sure that information gets to the coaches about what you're doing to help them put a better product on the field via film, recruiting, practice facilities, and just overall contacts? Because I know management deals with most of it, but some of the things coaches just like are left in the dark, and they need to know a little bit more than sometimes what they're told.
It's got to come from the owners. We don't want to step on anybody's toes. And, you know, we give information to the owners. We feel, you know they need to share certain stuff with the coaches or certain stuff they don't.
Right.
So, I mean, hopefully our owners will share it with the coaches.
And do you guys have a film / a video training or trading policy for some?
Yes.
You do too? Okay, cool. Because you're the only league that I haven't coached or been involved with. I was part of... I'm on my fourth league, I think. It's only second team, but fourth league, and I've seen them all ran a little bit differently, but the basic principles is everybody's being run the same way with just little differences here and there. I'm trying to...
We're really different in that, you know, our owners don't make policy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's the buck stops with you, basically.
That's right.
Okay, so that's where you're more of, you know, one person in charge, whereas like an example, the IWFL, they have a council, and everybody votes and everything like that. You're not like that. You're like, this is my league, this is how I want it run, and okay, that makes more sense, and especially to hear it come from you, that, you know, I've heard stories, because I've been involved since right after Turner folded his thing. You know, Carter Turner, and, you know, you probably know some of the players that I've actually coached or coached with, and they've been around since 2001, and they said that experience was quite enlightening for them when they were in Daytona and all that stuff.
It was a nightmare. I mean, that's exactly why I started the league.
Yeah, well, that's what I've heard, and, you know, and I've never actually had the opportunity to talk to you, so I really appreciate you, you know, returning my email and coming on my show, so.
Well, what I found, because when I found out about women's football, I was so excited, and I emailed them and said, here are my credentials in sports marketing. What can I do to help you? They emailed me back right away and said, we want you to be a consultant. We love your, you know, your background, blah, blah, blah. And after working with them for a month, I'm not going to name names, but I will tell you this. I would call up, their phone would be disconnected. I'd send them something by mail, they'd be returned, they got kicked out of their offices. And what I found out was they were running a men's league, and they were running around the country hosting tryouts for women and using that money to pay their bills from the other league. And I just irritated me, you know, that they kind of walking on the backs of these poor women that wanted to learn to play football.
Yes, that's the story I hadn't heard, so thank you for filling me in on that one. But, you know, every year there's new leagues starting and stuff like that, and I'm not sure if you know of the new leagues this year, but it seems like I've witnessed the same sort of thing. There's a men's league being run, and they found out about something, and now they want to run a women's league, so.
Everybody wants to run a women's league because they can't run a men's league.
Yeah, well, it's just so funny because there's so many men out there playing football, and there's so many women that want to play football, but we don't need, you know, thousands of teams. We need somebody that can actually get the marketing and have their teams market themselves, so that's what you say, can get paid.
There's not going to be thousands of teams, and, you know, there might be hundreds, but, I mean, there's a lot of places that still want to play football, and there's plenty of room for expansion, that's for sure.
There is.
And, you know, the NFL used to have 100-something teams at one point before it was the NFL, so, you know, it's just a part of the growth of the sport. And what people have to keep in mind is this is not a new league. We are a brand-new sport.
Yeah, exactly. It's not
something. We're going to go through this. I mean, the NFL, it took them, like, 20-something years before they got to where they were, 30 or 40 years.
Right.
You know, it's just not an overnight success story.
And since when did this reincarnation of women's football start? 2000 or 99?
Right, they were playing in the 70s.
Right, they were playing in the 70s and took like 20-some years off, and then they came back in 99. And 3 years since I've been involved in 2001, it's gotten a little bit better.
And it's going to, you know, because now, you know, more and more girls are wanting to play.
Right, and more people are hearing about it, and more people are realizing that it's not some powder puff lingerie.
No.
It's real football.
Really is good football, so.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being on the show tonight, and I look forward to having future conversations with you so that we can, as a whole, no matter what league or team we're involved with, promote the sport of women's football.
Well, we're doing all we can from this end, that's for sure.
Well, thank you very much,
We appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a good evening.
You too, sir.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Catherine Masters, the president of the NWFA, and hopefully we'll be back on the show for some more future topics. I'm Coach Ben. This has been Third and Long. Now back to me, live.
All right. Hope everybody enjoyed that. That was Catherine Masters of the NWFA in an earlier interview today. She was unable to be on live. She had something planned, but some very enlightening things there. She had a lot to say. She was very deliberate and, I guess, blunt about some of the things she had to say, and she said some good things. It's very nice to hear what she has to say, because she doesn't sugarcoat anything, and that's something I found very nice. Once again, this is Third and Long with Coach Penn. We're talking about the silly season. Don't forget to hop on the chat boards and ask any questions if you have something referring to, you know, anything Catherine Masters had to say or something that you would like me to ask her. She seems very approachable, and she was very easy to get in contact with. So just shoot me an email, hop on the chat board. Feel free to call in. The number's 347-826-7278. So next, before we go into getting into what she said, I basically put the same questions to the IWFL Chief Operating Officer, Kesnia Disney. Little, you know, switches here and there because I'm more familiar with how the IWFL works, but basically it's the same question, so we'll go over that right now. Kesnia Disney is the Chief Operating Officer, like I said. I asked her how long has she been in this position, and she said she began working as a volunteer way back in 01, so she's been around as long as I have, but she actually accepted a position in 04, and I believe through talks with her that she is the only paid position in the IWFL. Everybody else is volunteers, even though there is an executive council, which has a VP of marketing, a VP of administration, and a CEO, and next year they actually hope to add more positions. So unlike the NWFA, which is two positions, the basically owner president and her assistant, this actually has four, with one of them being paid. The silly season, which I refer to it as, when the Philadelphia team switched over, like at the end of the season, as soon as they lost, they changed their name to the Firebirds and joined the IWFL. I was asking, how does the IWFL recruit teams? They said they don't recruit. We let everybody know when we are accepting applications, but don't cold call anyone. So I followed that up with, so you don't actively pursue teams in different leagues. This is what she had to say. No, we are open to accepting teams from other leagues, but we don't pursue them. If they contact us, we give them the info, but we don't contact them first. It is important that all teams in the league are here because they generally want to be, not because I sold them on the idea. That these are all direct quotes from Kesnia Disney, the Chief Operating Officer of the IWFL. So after she told me how she recruits and what she does, the IWFL has the Tier 2 and Tier 1 system, so I follow that up with, how do you know if a team is going to be in Tier 1 or Tier 2? This is what she followed up with. We talk to them to find out what their roster size is and what their budget can handle. Generally, Tier 1 teams are going to have season expenses in the $75,000 to $200,000 range. Big teams are expensive to travel and promote, so those budgets are bigger. Tier 2 teams generally have season expenses in the $25,000 to $50,000 range. We look to the teams to give us accurate info, and for the most part, it's worked out pretty well. We don't force teams into one tier or the other. It's a decision we make with the team delegates so that they are in the best position to be successful. So that was very enlightening because I wasn't sure how Tier 1 and Tier 2 teams were divided. I actually had many a talk with Kesnia and Lori at the IWFL championship game about that, because the caliber of play wasn't inferior to the Tier 1 teams. They played really good football. They matched up very well. And their rosters, while they were smaller, I've seen Tier 1 teams with less. So it's basically a budget and how much they can afford that places you in a tier. So follow that up. My new question was, IWFL has 40-plus teams, and that's a lot more than the NWFA has. How does she manage to keep everyone happy? Same question I posed to Catherine Masters. She said, well, it's a challenge. Everyone isn't always going to agree on how to do things, so naturally there will always be someone that isn't thrilled with something. For the most part, though, because we have so much open communication in the league, I think most people are happy with how things are going. Team delegates have a voice in all matters, and the delegate council is responsible for the big decisions league-wide, so we at the league office are just carrying out the policies the teams institute. When everyone is in on decision, it's a lot easier to keep the folks happy with the actions of the executive council. It's definitely a work in progress, though. Just like when Catherine was saying, it's her way or the highway, this, she actually mentioned that the owners don't have a voice. They're going to do what she says, and that's it. And it's not up to the owners to run the league. Well, in the IWFL, it's not necessarily up to them to run the league, but they have their voice. So the IWFL is more like a democracy, and the NWFA is more like a dictatorship. That would be an easy way to describe the two. And not saying that one works better over the other, But I'm not going to voice my opinion on all of that right now. I am very happy in the IWFL. Let me just say that. With that being said, I followed it up. As a coach, what is being done to give coaches more of what they think they need to put a better product on the field? Similar to the question I asked Ms. Masters. And she basically had a short answer to this one. I'd love to get into this, but there's too much to write for one email. We'll have some announcements by next week's show, though. So that means that everybody needs to clear their schedule next Wednesday to make sure that they're listening to Third and Long with Coach Penn at 7 o'clock, because Kesnia is going to have a free hour, we hope, where she is going to break some news. There's been a lot of rumors on message boards about Coach Lee's camp that is no longer associated with the Amazons because the Amazons were told they were not allowed to use their name in it. So it's just the Las Vegas Showgirls putting on the camp and charging an absurd amount of money. So, and don't think I'm being mean or saying that it's an absurd amount of money. I mean, I know Coach Lee. We've talked, and I'm not necessarily in disagreement with the camp. I just can't believe the price is that much, because I went to Florida State, and Florida State's a Division I school, and this was back before they had lost so many games. And camps, coaching clinics and football camps were no more than $40 or $50. And Coach Lee is charging $130 per person, and then you have to pay for hotels. So it's going to cost over $200 per individual. And looking at the roster, it looks like a bunch of coaches from who he's either played or has been in contact with. I won't be there, because I will actually be at an FSU game in Tallahassee that I've been planning for a long time. When I left the WPFL and joined the Quake and came to the IWFL, I was very happy because I was in the spring season and I could actually watch college football again. Well, being an FSU grad and being the football fanatic that I am, I buy season tickets and I fly back to Florida several times a year for the games. I'm actually going to 4 home games this year, and one of the games is Bowdoin versus Bowdoin, November 8th. So I will actually be there for that one and won't be able to attend anything that's happening that weekend, whether it be with the IWFL or Coach Lee's conference. And the ladies would like me to remind you that on Sunday, 3 p.m. PST, that's Pacific Standard Time for you acronym people out there, Coach Lee will be on their show discussing that football camp, and he says he has some exciting news to share. Always selling something, Coach Lee, always selling something. You keep at it. Right now, I want to compare the two interviews I had. I had one, you know, very personal, and it went in-depth with some stuff in the NWFA, and then I had one that I've had conversations off the record with Kesney about certain things, and then I've, you know, of course, have this right here, and compared the two things. It's just funny, because both leagues have similar issues and problems. Financial issues of the teams not surviving seems to be more of an issue in the NWFA, and roster limits. There seems to be a lot of small rosters in both leagues. IWFL counters that with a Tier 2 system so that they have more of a chance, because the smaller rosters are playing each other. Does it need work? Does it need tweaking? Yes, because there are teams that belong in Tier 2 that necessarily aren't. Now, there's a silly season. So far, we have one team that has switched and several teams that have folded or we haven't heard from in a while. The WPFL, for instance, they ended right before the NWFA and IWFL season started, basically, with their championship, Houston Energy versus the SoCal Scorpions, with the Scorpions coming out on top. And almost all of the teams in WPFL are gone. The New Mexico Burn became the Menace. They're now in the IWFL. Dallas and the IWFL, they won the championship. Vegas, IWFL. Amazon, NWFA. New Jersey, NWFA. Empire took the year off, but they joined the IWFL. Connecticut, IWFL. Toledo, we don't know. Toledo hasn't been heard from. They haven't updated their website. They do have a mentioning about 2008 tryouts, but nothing really specific is on there. The same goes for Indiana. They're nowhere to be found. Carolina is in the IWFL. Wisconsin, IWFL. Minnesota, NWFA. The Scorpions put something up there that they were selling their team. Then they rescinded that, and now there's not much information you could find on them, but through the message boards, Coach Ring has mentioned some things that they will never join the IWFL, and who knows, I mean, they had a really good rivalry with NWFA, so maybe they're looking towards the NWFA, which is good, as long as they're playing football, because they're a very good team. As for Houston, Houston is a touchy subject because a lot of people have called H-Town Cyclones the Energy this year. Well, guess what? Proof is out there that they are not. The Energy and the Cyclones are their own team. You know why? Because they both announced tryouts this week. H-Town, last time my last show, H-Town's website was down. Went back on today. It's been redone with all the championship stuff, and they have tryouts August 30th, and they're charging $55. Houston, who is still listed as a WPFL team, they have all the logos on there and everything, have tryouts on September 13th with no fee. Now, there can be a lot of stuff read into this. They could be having two different tryouts and seeing what team actually has more people and then deciding to combine or, you know, remain separate. From what I've heard and from what I can foresee, it looks like there will be two separate teams. Will this weaken the area? Most definitely. If they have the Energy and the Cyclones next year, I can almost guarantee neither one of them will have a chance to win a title. All two teams do in one area is weaken the area. I know Houston's a big city, but so is Detroit and so is Dallas, and it's never worked. Even in Long Beach, it's never worked. And Long Beach has the greater LA area where we had the Quake, the Aftershock, and the Amazons all right here with SoCal Scorpions being just an hour and a half away. So to have so many teams in one area is never a thing for success. So I'm going to keep my eye on the Houston team, I guess, growth, because the Energy and Cyclones, there's got to be a lot of loyalty to be tested. A lot of people, 14 players on the Cyclones were Energy players, and now they're Cyclones and they have championships, and will they remain Cyclones or will they go back to the team? They only had 1 year as a Cyclone, so will they go back to the team that they've been bleeding red and silver for, you know, 5 years? Who knows? But I can't wait to look forward to it. As for some of the other things we talked about, there's new leagues. I listened to the Jeff King interview with the ladies from WFB talk. Not really stressed about that anymore. He has some great ideas and something I think both leagues could use, more specifically the teams. They could use the contacts that he has for building fan bases, getting discounts on equipment, venues, and stuff like that. But I don't see that league ever going anywhere. I like the fact that we're down to two leagues, and I think we probably need two leagues for a couple more years. And I probably wouldn't be that upset if it was several years, because the AFL and the NFL used each other to get good. They used each other to become the NFL, the Billy Badass that it is today, the world sport that dominates all of money. They say soccer is the world sport because more people attend soccer games. Well, you know why more people attend soccer games? Is because it's an easy sport. All you need to play soccer is a ball. I'm in Southern California, and it is hilarious watching people play anywhere they can find room. People are playing soccer. It's expensive to play football. You need money to play football and to buy the equipment, to get the fields. All you need in soccer is a ball and bodies. Bodies are easy to come up with. Football, you need bodies that are willing to just destroy each other in a physical match with tons of equipment on in the worst kind of conditions. So I love football, and I think it's such a great sport. And like I said from the very first show, that my show would not just be about women's football. It'll be my priority, but guess what's getting ready to start? Men's football. Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited. Who watched the first preseason game on Sunday? Redskins versus – anybody got it? Did anybody watch the game? I don't know. Nobody's out there talking or listening. But the Redskins were on, and they played very well against the Colts. Colts didn't have Peyton Manning, but it's so exciting to see NFL football back. But I'm not an NFL fan. I think they're a bunch of spoiled, overpaid prima donnas. So only thing that gets me to watch the NFL is hanging out with my friends and playing fantasy football, because fantasy football makes it exciting because you can root for people you really don't care about. Then there's high school football, and I played high school football. Never made it to college. Instead of college, I was going to walk on at Florida State, but my scholarship wouldn't let me. So I became involved with the coaching staff and got to hang out with them on a routine basis. And I am a college football fanatic, and a college football coaches preseason poll was released this past week with Georgia coming out number one, and I knew that was going to happen. It was either going to be USC or Georgia, and I figured Georgia would get it because they had so many people returning, and they're in the ever-dominant SEC, where USC is in, I don't know, the Pac-10, which is all but a joke. So I'm East Coast biased when it comes to college football. Everybody out here is a fair weather fan, and it's just so funny to watch. For those of you who don't know, I just love college football. I have three TVs set up in my house with three games going at all times on Saturdays. I usually have friends over. We grill out, order pizza, just get crazy. It's a lot of fun. So if you're in the area, you know, just give me a call. We'll go over some college football. And the one thing I do is I turn off my coaching buttons when I'm watching college football. I become a total fan. I yell at the screen. My girlfriend goes nuts. She's like, settle down. I'm like, you did the same thing with the Steelers. Why are you going to yell at me for doing the same thing for the Seminoles? Bobby Bowden's 90 years old. He doesn't need me to coach college football anymore. So, yeah, I'm very emotional when it comes to college football. And we'll be traveling to Florida State for four games this year. Next week, I know I'm going to cover the big announcement from the IWFL. That should probably be a major portion of the show. I don't know if I'm going to cover Deion's camp and conference, because it will have been covered on Sunday. Even though I know it will hit some hot issue spots for me, I'm going to let it go and just listen and be excited for all the people going and learning something about football. For those of you who play, I'm not really sure what you're going to get out of it, unless you have horrible coaches who don't teach you anything. So I think for those of you who have been playing for several years and know a lot about football, it's going to be, you know, a refresher and something to get you ready for the next season, and maybe give you a thing here and there to go about. I think the main thing is going to be just making a ton of contacts, getting to know the people around the league and how everybody does things differently, but in turn it's just the same. I will try and have my sister on next week, A-Train. She's going to discuss where she's been and what her future holds for her. And for those of you on the message boards who are interested in throwing some questions out there, throw them out there. I'll write them down, do the research. I was actually surprised after Gig put that thing out there that so many people had mentioned stuff about it. And so I actually did some research on some of the players, and I hope to have those up in the upcoming episodes, along with high school football, because high school football is huge in Southern California, as big as it is in Pittsburgh and Dallas and some areas of Florida. So that poll actually just came out, the ESPN Top 50 with a Texas team. I think it's Euless. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Euless is number one. Long Beach Poly, who's produced all kinds of NFL talent, they're 11th or 12th. My high school wasn't on there, so I was kind of disappointed. But my high school's actually been very good every year since I've left, because they fired the entire coaching staff, which I probably had something to do with, because we all quit at one point. The entire team quit, walked out, and the coaching staff had to call meetings and stuff like that. So that was fun. Even back then, I was controversial, and I still am today. I'm always going to put my opinions out there, what I think, and I look forward to people, you know, responding to me and saying, hey, listen, you're an idiot, because – or, you know what, I really agree with that. That needs to be said. People really need to know. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have Kesnia and Catherine on tonight, because I wanted people to hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, that this is what they're about, this is what they represent in their league. So for those of you who have been listening, thank you for listening. There's all kinds of things to say, and I will have them in future episodes. Kesnia looks like for sure next week, where we will talk about some exciting issues there. And I want to get some more coaches on because this is technically a coaches show, and I want to get coaches' responses to what they need from their leagues, the two leagues, IWFL, NWFA. What do you need more from your players, practice attendance, film review? What do you need from your management? More communication, better practice facilities, and your league, video, support, marketing that leads to a paycheck eventually. I mean, I have no problem doing this for free. I love it so much, like Catherine said, a labor of love. Yes, I did write it down, BJ. I wrote it down in the back of my skull, so whenever I roll my eyes back, I see it. So that is the big thing there. So questions abound. What new teams are going to be formed? Who is going to put the money out there to start new teams in new areas? Please, if you have a team in your area and you have a problem with the owner, the coach, swallow your pride because it's about playing football. It's not about whether you like or feel something. Just look at the NFL. There are a lot. Steve Smith punched a teammate. That is not okay. But guess what? He's still playing football. He's going to take his punishment and still play football. You're not going to get along with your teammates, your coaches, or your owners. You don't have to. Guess what? You just have to play football. From whistle to whistle, you have to be on the same page. If that's too much to ask, then you shouldn't be out here. It doesn't matter what you feel about anything outside the realms of what play you're running at all. Feeling, there's a lot of emotion in women's football. I've noticed that. And some of the emotion is warranted. When you get excited that you did something, scored a touchdown, made a big hit, made a long field goal, stuff like that. Get excited about it. Show your emotion. That's the one thing great about women's football is that you can show your emotion without getting fined or getting flagged. Women's football is a new sport, and it's growing, but you need to put the emotional issues and all the drama aside and just play football. Go to practice. I know you have a job. A lot of people have families and other issues. But if you're not at practice, that team can't put a good show and entertainment on the field to get the fans in the stands. Speaking of those fans, Catherine mentioned that she has anywhere from 50 to 500 people at a game. And she had, back in the day, 1,500 to 5,000. Well, not sure what those teams are doing, and the attendance is higher on the East Coast. She cut me off a couple times, but she was very direct, and she wanted to say what she was going to say, and hey, that's going to get your word out there. The attendance is higher on the East Coast because there's less to do, and football is a religion. It's basically a religion. I'm not trying to spit on any religion out there, but football is a religion on the East Coast. I mean, it is huge. People revolve their lives around football, and I still do, even though I live on the West Coast. But out here, there's so much more to do, and everybody's so fickle, and everybody only associates themselves with winners. I guarantee you, I see 80% less Lakers jerseys, Angels jerseys, and Dodgers jerseys when they're losing. I mean, people don't talk about the Dodgers when they suck. People don't talk about USC when they suck. That place is empty, but if they're winning, that place is packed. Fans are everywhere, and you're like, hey, where were you last year? I wear my Celtics jersey all the time, and people look, oh, you bandwagoner. I was like, I've been a fan since the 80s, and I didn't hate the Lakers until I moved down here and met your fans because the teams of the Lakers were real good way back in the day. But back on fan attendance, she said she had 50 to 500. Well, we had an average around 400 at our games in the Quake this year, which was just really, really good, and we sold tickets for $5, and we gave a lot away because word of mouth is huge, and if you don't put a good show on, it's not going to bring them back. And we had two blowouts at home. No, actually, we had three. The first one was actually pretty good because it was our first game, and we had benched a lot of starters, so Tucson was actually leading us the first two series of the games because we benched all of our starters that didn't show up for certain practices the whole first quarter. When they went in, though, they were shut down. They never scored the rest of the game. And then we had the barn burner of a game against Vegas, where neither defense decided to play in the fourth quarter, where it was just so exciting and points were back and forth and it was an exciting game. And that's the kind of games that people need, and not so much it has to be 41-38, but just exciting games that are close and the competition is rare. The Chicago fans were treated to a great championship game. And if more people would have showed up at the first one, even though it was 26-6, it was a great game. The 3,000-plus fans that were there were amazing, and the NWSL only had 328, so 10 times the amount of fans at the NWSL game, and yes, they did have the advantage of the home team being in the championship game, but I guarantee you, there still would have been a lot of people there because the word was out, and they did a great job of selling the game. The other thing I want to bring up is that the stats for two different leagues is still, you know, obscure. Dallas did not do the stats for the game and upload them to the site, so I still don't have those stats. Chicago did, but I don't think they're right because it says they only scored 3 touchdowns when they scored 29 points. So that's at least 4 touchdowns. So I'm not even going to reiterate. I know that the quarterback had almost 200 yards throwing. The running back, Melissa Smith, had very few carries for almost 100 yards. So, I mean, it was a very good game, and whenever those stats do pop up, I will get them out there to you. I'm still waiting on the video from the leagues to basically break it down and evaluate the game as a whole because I got to watch it from the sideline. So, I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Next week, remember, we're going to talk with Kesnia Disney, the COO of the IUFL, and hopefully get her to break some news. Lots of rumors on the message boards about what's happening in the off season, all-star games, all-star rosters. Neither league has set those up yet. I know Sarge put his out there, which was pretty cool. I didn't understand having an all-star roster and then super people because it didn't make sense. If you're going to have an all-star team, you basically have 2 or 3 quarterbacks, 4 or 5 running backs, 7 or 8 receivers, about 15 line. You know, you have basically put a roster together. That's what you do. And he had like 20 running backs listed on the All-Stars, and then for the super team, he had what would be a normal All-Star team. So congratulations to those players on those lists for being recognized as superb players. I actually had a couple. Even one of my coaches was nominated, and I had nothing to do with the nomination, so I thought that was cool to have some players on there and a coach on there. So thank you, Sarge. Not sure if you're listening, but it's appreciated. My players, I'm sure, were very honored, including my girlfriend. She was actually on there as a punter. She was the first team punter under his all-star list. So congratulations, baby. Even though we only say that because it's the off-season. Once football comes around, it's like, what the hell are you doing? Didn't I tell you, drop the nose, the ball will go, you know. It's fun living in this house when season's on. We're not allowed to talk about football in the house. So it keeps the stress level down and the energy alive. I guess that's the best way to put it. So next week, remember, I'm going to do some Where Are They Now? Talk with the IWFL and maybe find out where some of these teams have been or are going. That's a better question. That's a better way to put it. Where some of these teams from the old WPFL are going, or if there's another league being created, because I have heard rumors that there's another league, not the one that they interviewed about, but a different league that's a regional league like Jeff King was talking about for his Fullman's Football Alliance, but a regional league with, like, I think it's 11 teams or something like that. I've seen stuff, heard stuff, so it'll be interesting, and most of these teams are in both the IWFL and NWFA. I didn't see any new teams on this list, so there could be some defecting. Lots of stuff to come in the silly season. Future shows will include some off-season conditioning. I'm going to have Coach Hughes back for that, some of the program that he runs to keep his players so strong and in football shape. Then I will have some chalk talk with some other coaches. Coach Konecki, who was on last week, me and him have traded some emails about offensive stuff, and we're going to do that in a couple shows. So I have to say goodnight, because my battery's actually dying, and I thought I had it fully charged. Must have been that interview I did today. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. This is Third and Long with Coach Penn, every Wednesday, 7 p.m. till when I finish. And don't forget to catch Sundays with the WFB Talk Ladies. That is 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Everybody have a great night and enjoy the upcoming NFL and college football seasons. So long.